Welcome to this episode of Saintly Witnesses, where I talk to the Catholic behind the account. Today I'm speaking with Dr. Joseph Terry, who is a theologian and a philosophical counselor, who's going to come on and share his faith journey as a Catholic, and also unpack some of his professional work in academia as a counselor. So thank you for coming on and sharing this crucial information.
Thanks for having me, Efren. I'm really excited to be here.
Yeah, for sure. So let's get started with the interview. So much to talk about, so much to learn about you and your career. But I always like to start this conversation off with humble beginnings. So what was your faith journey like growing up? Were you a convert, revert, or convert to the Catholic Church? And what were some major events that happened that influenced your faith life growing up?
No, that's a great question. It's one of those questions that, you know, we could be here for about an hour recounting all the particular moves that animate and make up my own narrative. But I'll just say this. You know, I myself was baptized as an infant in the Catholic Church, and however, I never completed any of my sacraments after that. My mom really didn't raise me in that faith. My father, African-American, my mother, Boricua, Puerto Rican, my father okayed it. He was like, yeah, let's get our son baptized, even though he comes from a sort of Southern Baptist perspective. But he was very gracious in that regard, from what I know. And I have the pictures and all of that there. So, you know, baptism, Catholic by baptism, but again, raised in such a way where only a handful of times I went to mass, and that was typically with my grandmother when I would go and visit her in Rochester, New York. Speeding up the narrative a bit, my father over the years would entertain me with regards to the question of Jesus, and he was quite adamant about having me really consider who Jesus was and to even articulate that he is my Lord and Savior. He would say, you know, son, you know, who's your Lord and Savior? And I would say, Jesus, Dad, right? Because, you know, it was one of those things, he wanted me to really say that. And then we would have conversations around that, which I really appreciated. You know, he passed away in 2019. So I miss him dearly. And in the midst of religious conversations, my dad and I would also talk about science. Interestingly enough, I had a great love for science growing up. Speed up the tape a little bit more, got into the University of Rochester for undergraduate studies in philosophy and astrophysics. And it was there where, around my junior year, I really started to pursue explicitly questions around religion. And if you would have asked me, you know, Joe, you know, what are you in college? I would have said, Catholic. You know, I had a little cross and I would have self-identified as a Catholic, though I never completed any of my other sacraments, really never attended mass. And so it was sort of just a linguistic appendage that I would have used, right? Had the King James Bible opened at one of my dorm tables that my Pentecostal uncle on my dad's side gave me before college from Florida, so I'm all over the map there. But again, the religious questions began to be pursued by me more explicitly in my junior and senior year at university, of which took me through a number of paths religiously and philosophically speaking, exploring Buddhism. And other forms of Eastern traditions and mysticism, kind of found my way back through Jewish mysticism, Islamic mysticism, Sufism, things like that, Kabbalah, very much drawn to esoteric and the occult as well. None of those things I found in the final analysis satisfying for me. And I was wrestling with some things. And so I said, let me give the Bible a chance. So I opened up that King James Bible, which was already open on Psalm 23, and I started to prayerfully read through it. Didn't know what I was reading, though I was drawn to it. I would listen to a radio station, Calvary Chapel Ministries radio station. I listened to their sermons, really touching my heart. And over the period of about a year or so, I found myself actually really believing in Jesus and beginning to follow him, right? Don't ever remember praying the Lord's Prayer, as it's quite popular in a kind of Protestant evangelical context. but there was a sort of conscientious move for me to say, yeah, I'm about this life. And it was happening also in concert with questions concerning apologetics, like how do I know the Bible is true? And so it was a lot of intellectual stuff, but also kind of an existential, emotional, psychological elements as well. This then led me several years later into seminary, Protestant seminary. Didn't know why I was called there, sensed a calling there, nevertheless, went there, pursued a master's in divinity at Alliance Theological Seminary, ended up years later teaching philosophy, having some background in philosophy, but also pastoring at a church. And so I was one of several pastors on staff, overlooking the curriculum, overlooking catechesis and things like that within a sort of non-denominational Protestant evangelical context. And interestingly enough, I graduated seminary 2011, but even before that, I started to explore the early fathers of the church, which brought a radical intellectual shift for me. I started to sort of experience that the early church, the disciples of the disciples, really seemed super Catholic in so far as I understood it to be. And so I had a rift inside of myself and my mind and my psyche. After exploring it deeper, I kind of saw the continuity of the one Holy Catholic and Apostolic Church and the decisive difference that the Reformation and Protestantism, as I was practicing and understood, was. And so what that meant for me is that as I served as a pastor and I did my thing, I was carrying with me this sense of kind of almost an intellectual disingenuousness, if that makes any sense. Like, I'm like, okay, I'm preaching out of the scriptures, I'm doing my thing, I'm teaching. But I found myself also referencing many of the early fathers and then even making arguments for confession, even though there was no sacrament of confession in the Protestant context, but would speak about that in a way that was analogous within our own ecclesial community. So this led to a sort of crisis years later, 2019, where I, over the summer, through a series of real prayerful wrestling and intellectual engagement, I decided to return home to Rome, if you will, swam the Tiber, came in, completed my sacraments, and there it is, you know, I had my marriage convalidated and all of that there. And it's been a wild ride. So 2019, having my sacraments completed and in the one Holy Catholic and Apostolic faith. I hope that helps there a little bit.
Yeah. Your journey has like a lot of, lot of parts, man. You experimented and tasted a little bit of all world religions, and ultimately found the one that best helps you find a relationship with the Creator. So that's good. Mm-hmm. So in your journey, you mentioned that you were serving as a pastor. So you're a philosophical counselor, which is interesting because I never heard that before. Could you describe what it is and like how you approach your clients and your like day-to-day work?
Yeah. So, you know, first let me just say what philosophical counseling is. You know, it's the use of philosophical concepts and methods and theories in individual or group counseling or organizational counseling. And it's not in any way attempting to be a substitution for psychotherapeutic techniques, right? It's not anything like that. It's really a space where people are coming with more existential questions, maybe questions about the meaning of life, or they possess a worldview, a particular paradigm, but they see some inconsistencies either in their actions, in their thinking, or in their own thinking. And so philosophical counseling then, as it in that sense, it's suitable for clients who are essentially well-adjusted, right? We're not trying to do psychotherapy in any way. And I work with clients and organizations that are looking for wisdom, discernment, And each session will look differently depending on who I'm working with, right? And what kind of questions or particular issues they're wrestling with that they bring to the table. It's, you know, it's a wonderful opportunity for self-exploration and introspection. When we think about philosophy, we tend to do so from a kind of modern perspective, which is philosophy is a sort of dry, arid academic discipline and doesn't have any sort of element to life. But yet, at the same time, we know that, you know, when you read, let's say, Plato's account of Socrates or Plato or Aristotle and whatnot, there is this sort of sage-like quality to the philosophers classically understood, both East and West. You know, if you look in let's say, Far East Asia, Lao Tzu, the author of the Tao Te Ching, or Confucius and the Analects, or, you know, even the philosophy and ingredient in Hinduism, there's this sort of sage-like element where there's one who comes alongside another to guide and to offer further reflection. Socrates is the preeminent example. And, you know, it's not by mistake that even the early fathers of the church would see themselves as philosophers, right? This distinction between theology and philosophy, again, is also a sort of pre-modern move, right? You see that division happening in the Middle Ages, but it really blossoms in the modern period. So we make this sort of, you know, distinction, and it has its place. But, you know, Augustine would never have called himself a theologian, right? He saw himself, as he articulates in the City of God, as a philosopher. And Justin Martyr is a clear example of this. And so I know that was a kind of a little off, you know, just discussing, you know, the elements of philosophy and theology, but philosophical counseling, again, is an opportunity to work with people who are wrestling through certain existential, ideological, philosophical queries, and they see that it would be great to have some guidance there. And so that's something that I provide as services.
That's fascinating. I can remember some time ago, before he passed, but a long time ago, when I was discerning what I wanted to do, I know I told my uncle I wanted to get my master's in divinity, and he told me, you know, people will always have like these deep questions, and like you being a counselor or a chaplain or something like that will always be relevant, because people will always have like life questions that need to be answered. So, I mean, as you speak, I remember his wisdom that he told me a long time ago.
That's beautiful, man. Yeah, and it's real. That's still something I'm sure within you, right? The desire to touch lives and to help.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I have my master's in clinical social work. So,
oh, there you go.
But yeah, yeah. That's a different story for another day.
right.
But in your work as a philosophical counselor, how does Catholicism ever connect with it? Like, I'm sure you just don't go straight in and say, hey, have you considered Catholicism? Or do you like tread on fine line on like presenting the gospel and like the wisdom of the church? Or do you just blatantly go in for the kill, so to speak?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So essentially, you know, philosophical counseling in this regard is similar to any form of counseling, insofar as I want to have and what I seek to do is offer a kind of objective foreground through which we can discuss whatever issues that the person is bringing to the table. So if I have someone who is coming to me as a practicing Muslim, and she, let's say, is currently wrestling with a particular pillar of Islam and her own experience as a kind of secular-minded person in contemporary New York City, and she's trying to reconcile how she can be faithful to her own religion and yet at the same time navigate the kind of social scene of New York City, you know, in the 21st century. So what I will do there is I'm going to be where she is. I'm going to talk about the varying surahs. We'll kind of unpack Islam and think about philosophically what are some ways in which we can find a kind of integration for her worldview. I would never begin to say, well, have you considered Jesus as your Lord and Savior? You know, like, you know, did you, you know, have you considered that maybe perhaps he's more than a prophet? You know, so nothing like that. It's not the space or the ground for evangelistic elements in that regard, right? It's all about helping my client, our clients, gain what they're looking for, wisdom and discernment around whatever particular issues they are currently wrestling with. Now, that being said, my own philosophical disposition and even my own practice as a philosophical counselor, and not just that, as a professor and as a husband and so on, is decisively shaped and informed by my Catholic Christian ethos, right? So I take the incarnation seriously, and part of what that means pastorally is I'm trying to enter into the world of this person. I'm trying to journey with them and be a light in some way or another. So yeah, Catholicism and the theological framework is definitely always operative, but in that sense and kind of in the background, not leading out as a mode of evangelism, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, like you said, it all goes back to being objective and meeting the client where they are and trying to help them make sense of like their religion and like, I guess, where they currently are in their life. So I get what you're saying on that one. So I think in 2023, from what I saw on social media, this year or last year, you earned your doctorate in philosophical and theological anthropology.
Yes.
Would you unpack like what this is and describe your dissertation a little bit and how it adds to like the body of theology?
Sure, absolutely. I'm chuckling because it's wild. I just completed it, actually. It was this year, July. What was it? July 12th. I think I defended the dissertation. Dr. Aaron Ritchies, and he's over at St. Benedict's College, and Dr. Matthew Levering. They were my two external examiners, and to God be the glory, I was able to defend it with no correction, passed with no correction. So I'm just amazed by that, and it was a wonderful learning experience. The work was done at the University of Nottingham, UK, and philosophical and theological anthropology, right? What the heck does that mean? Essentially, using the tools and resources of theology and philosophy to explore perennial questions about what it means to be human, right? And that's essentially what I did in my dissertation. The specific focus was our Blessed Mother. Mary, looking at Our Lady through the lens of both theology and philosophy in order to investigate how she might unveil for us what it means to be human, both theologically and philosophically. One of the reasons why I was laughing is because that's so much also connected to my own narrative, my own journey. Because as I said, in 2019, I made the switch. Right? I came back into the church, and I already was accepted into the program and began to do my work. But with this profound intellectual conversion with me, right, from sort of a general evangelical Protestant context to Catholicism, came with it a decisive shift in my desire or my thinking about a project. So I initially came into the program wanting to do something in anthropology, philosophical and theological anthropology, but I wanted to explore the question of flesh, what does it mean to possess flesh, sarx in Greek, the human being in relation to its facticity, its contingency, and so on. And it changed to Mary. And it was a wild thing. So I had to do a lot of research, a lot of background reading and some writing on that to get my mind and heart around the question of Our Lady in relation to anthropology, and thus out of that the dissertation blossomed. That came out of that space of conversion and thinking through what I myself was discovering. So the dissertation is titled "Human, All Too Human: Mariology as Theophilosophical Anthropology," and what I essentially do in the dissertation is I look at the four dogmatic truths of Our Lady as it's articulated by the church: her Immaculate Conception, her Divine Maternity, her Perpetual Virginity, her Assumption, and see how these dogmatic insights into Our Blessed Mother coordinate certain perennial questions about the human being, right? Where does the human being come from? What is the human being? What is the vocation of the human being as such? And what is its telos, its glory, its orientation? And so I do some real funky stuff there. I have a lot of French phenomenology, metaphysics. It's wild, bro. It's a wild thing. But I'm going to publish it, God willing. My advisor is very excited about it, Dr. Connor Cunningham, and we're moving right now towards publishing it as a book. And there are some other articles that have been publicized or published, I should say, that came out of that, and other work that I'm doing. So yeah,
it's amazing, and it sounds like the topic, as with most in all dissertations, it's like volumes that can be expanded on, even in this compilation that you created. And so I'm really hoping to see more of like how you expand on like the evidence and the theology that you discovered, how it goes. It sounds really interesting. And it sounds like a unique topic also.
Thank you.
So my last question is like one of my favorite questions I like to ask. So you've been a Catholic a little more than like 4 years or so. I'm sure by now you've picked a saint in the communion of saints who you admire and look to for intercession. So who's your favorite saint and why?
Oh, well, you know, of course, our Blessed Mother, right? You know, I know that's like a given for all Catholics, right? But it's like Blessed Mother, Saint Joseph, of course, as well. But here are, you know, my four other go-to saints that I've really been drawn to, and I'll explain why. And they are sort of articulated in no particular order. I'm just going to say them that come to my mind. Saint Philomena, Saint Charbel, the Lebanese Maronite monk, Saint Rita of Cassia, and my man, Padre Pio, Saint Pio of Petrichina. Now, there are two others that I love that are blesseds, Blessed Carlo Acutis and Blessed Giorgio Frassati. Why Saint Philomena? Her humility, her holdout, according to the tradition and private revelation, you know, she was to be given over to marriage to the emperor by her parents. The emperor wanted her. She was like, I'm not about this life. I'm married to Christ. They torture her to try to do it. She's like, nah, right? And she dies for the faith, and she maintains her love for Christ, her singular marriage to the Lord, and that veracity is just so beautiful to me in my mind, her love for the Lord in that regard. And she's young, right? Around 12 or 13 years old, according to the private revelations given. Saint Rita, you know, she's amazing. Different vocations in her life: mother, the single life, the mother life, the religious life. I think one of the things that's so beautiful about her is her love for the passion of the Lord, and how this cruciformity shapes and informs her own being. And as an intercessor, one who prays for what appears to be impossible, reminding me that all things are possible with God. You know, she had a great love. She wanted to go into the religious life, but she was obedient to her parents. She moved into marriage. And yet God brings this about later on in her life. And it's just amazing how God's will indeed be manifest. And it's so encouraging for me to reflect and think about that. Saint Charbel, his beautiful, beautiful vows to the evangelical councils of poverty, chastity, and obedience, the littleness, the smallness, and his great power in the spirit that comes out of that. He's drunk with the love and the presence of God, you know, and Saint Charbel would remain invisible. And what that teaches me is the mode of humility and invisibility, then rather than trying to shine and be seen, I want to learn how to become invisible with the one who is invisible, so that I may remain visible out of a space of love and presence and prayer for others. And of course, Padre Pio is just such a powerhouse in the spirit, and just all the different miraculous occurrences, and his forthrightness and a no nonsense kind of disposition, but his love for our Blessed Mother, the love for the Rosary. These are things that I seek to emulate, and I always turn to him for his intercession. So those four, of course, in addition to our Blessed Mother and Joseph, and Blessed Giorgio Frassati, Blessed Carlo Acutis. Young guys, different journeys, but their faithfulness to the Lord in the end, they resonate with me.
I love how your journey through the church like extends from like the first century all the way to modern day times with saints. So that's amazing. It's like a real reflection of the whole church from beginning to end. That's real good. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciated learning about, you know, your professional academic work with theological anthropology. Definitely something to research on and see what other types of literature or like peer-reviewed articles out there in journals. And most importantly, really loved hearing like your dynamic faith journey through world religions and how you ultimately came into the Catholic Church. And through this like conversation, I'm glad that you finally made it through the Catholic Church and like we stand shoulder to shoulder in Christ together as brothers. So really glad to like finally get your story and like hear about you.
I appreciate it, man. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. And you guys continue to pray for Dr. Terry and like his remarkable work that he does as a counselor. And most importantly, pray that the fruits of his work with his dissertation come into fruition and get published one day so that like he can expand more on this unique topic in theology. I think as a lover of research and the sciences, like there's so much out there to uncover. And whenever we can uncover something unique that needs to be told to everybody, we should definitely salute that. So definitely keep him in your prayers for his professional endeavor with that. And you guys can tune in to the next episode of Saintly Witnesses.